can you guys hear us?
Yes, just now.
Can you hear me now? Okay.
Yes.
I'd like to go around and say names. First in the cloud, Zendu. I mean, I'll say your names. Dennis. Bob. Paula. Ellen. Jeffrey. Betty. Christina. Dave. Paulette. Sabrina. Camille. Ruthann. And Jinmyu. And here in the dirt sand dome,
Alice.
Jeannie.
Susan. Myra.
Jim.
Toby. And I'm Shuketsu. We have the only thing I want to remind you all of is that our open mic or Sangha sharing night is coming up on August 6th, I think. This is Saturday night. So if you want to join us for that, please do. And there's a way to sign up for it too if you'd like to online. And I'm not sure who's speaking today.
Bob is.
Okay. Looking forward to it. That'll be great. All right. Thank you. Take it away, Bob.
Okay. Thank you. Well, let's see. Let's make sure that I can be heard just because we've had some problems. Ellen, we're good. How about you, Jinryu? Do I sound okay?
I think you're a little faint, but I can just turn up my microphone.
That's okay. No, I can certainly bring my volume up. Does that help?
It does help.
Okay. Let me see if I can do just a little bit more. How about that?
That's great, okay. I think.
Okay. If anybody has trouble hearing me, let me know. I will certainly make arrangements. So thank you, everybody, for coming today. Appreciate it. And I'm Bob. My name is Bob. And I'm from Tigard, which is close to the Zendo in terms of airline miles. We're just a few miles away, about 20 minutes away by road. And so I'm here today to give you a way-seeking mind talk. I listened through a number of them that are online and so forth, and I couldn't find a commonality, a pattern, a cookie cutter that I could follow. But that's okay. I have the general idea. And my title tonight or today is My Long and Winding Path to Bright Way. And so to start this climb to the mountaintop, Bright Way, let me start at the beginning, at the trailhead. As many do, I started this long and winding path to Bright Way while in college, in philosophy class, by reading the book Siddhartha by Hermann Hesse. And this is the book I actually saw and I read. And this is the actual book. You can see it's pretty worn. But that whole image, for some reason, the first time I saw the cover, I was filled with a warmth and longing I had never experienced before. There were a few things leading up to that moment which will give you some context. As with everyone, events or circumstances occur which have marked me in some way and have contributed to making me who I am today and my beliefs. My life is many threads, and describing one thread in this linear way means the whole fabric cannot be described in a linear fashion. The many strands or threads exist at the same time, and following one means that you have to kind of ignore the others for the moment. But they all come together in the end. Everything that has happened to me over the years has affected me spiritually in some way, big or small. I remember most of those things that have an effect, and there are many. I start at the beginning with a bit of my personal history for context. Origins. At the middle of the last century, I was born into a second generation German Welsh family with strong German roots. I have two generations worth of mixed Christian denominations. My grandmother was a Lutheran and my grandfather was a Catholic. My dad was raised Catholic, but he was asked to leave the Catholic high school in Chicago because he asked too many questions. He never returned. My mom was adopted out of Montana and then raised a Baptist in Spokane. Neither of their families approved of their marriage. So strong was prejudice and discrimination back in those days. My mother was outcast from both families. As a family, we moved around a lot. I was born in Seattle, moved to Denver, back to Seattle, then to Mill Valley, Marin County, California, and back to Seattle, next to Cedar Mill in Beaverton, Oregon, in 1955, not far from where Brightway Zen Center is today. And that was all in 5 years. Next to Sherwood Forest, Bellevue, Washington, in 1957. Notice that's 2 years later. And that is across the highway from the location where Microsoft Home Campus is today in Redmond. And at last, my last childhood home was in Lake Oswego, starting in 1965. But things were not all that wonderful. My dad, well, he was a very interesting person. Based on my stories and descriptions, professionals I have consulted for help in past years have described him as a narcissist with an inflated ego. He was also a perfectionist. Mom spent a lot of time intervening between Dad, my sister, and I. Mostly, as I remember, Mom tried to get him to lighten up, to stop being so critical, so harsh. I was never good enough, never did enough. He was a military man who prepared to go to medical school, but was thwarted by the start of World War II. He excelled at ROTC, Reserve Officer Training Corps, from early high school. And even though he never got to be an officer, he became a medical lab supervisor during the war, being a chemist. As a child, we even had Saturday inspections of our rooms. Yes, you know, bouncing the quarter off the blanket on your bed. That really happened in my house. Little wonder, though, that I was never issued a demerit when I served in the Air Force. Only in his last days in 2008 at 92 did he thank me for anything. Mom was another challenge. She was one of five children adopted out of a Welsh immigrant family in Montana around 1925. She and her two sisters went to a lawyer's family in Spokane, while the two brothers went to farming families in eastern Washington. Only in the last few years did I ever learn that my personal family was tolerated, but not accepted by either extended family. At my grandmother's house or cabin, we had to sleep in the bunks in the lowest level. Down in the basement. Well, it wasn't really a basement. It was on the side of a hill, so we were lower level, next to the washing machine and the workroom, while our cousins got to sleep in the nice upstairs bedrooms. Even that memory still hurts. My mom was beset with ailments as I was growing up. I was the eldest one, so I had to take care of her, mostly lifting heavy things like a full coffee pot for her. She had arthritis in many of her joints, making it very hard for her to do the most simple things of daily living. So, what do you think? Pretty much a typical American family? Well, maybe. Mom, Dad, and church. We tried out many different churches in the towns we are in over the years. Dad would check them out, then we would go for a while until we moved again. and Dad had disagreements over theology with the minister. In later years, when I was in college, Dad and I would have long discussions and arguments over fine points of theological or historical facts. I have learned to accept the possibility that others might have different understandings around the facts, even if we agree on what those facts are. 1960 and guilt. Growing up, I was often aware of the book, The Diary of Anne Frank. Now, Frank, as a last name, is my great-grandfather's family name from Stuttgart in Germany. Despite the truth that many non-Jewish Germans share that last name, I am mixed emotionally about being both German culturally and somehow related to possibly Jewish ancestors. I was ashamed to be German, even though none of our family were in Europe for any part of the Holocaust. I grew up in a neighborhood that had many Jewish kids. None of them blamed me to my face, but there was always a tension. It also didn't help that the Japanese of the Northwest were sent to internment camps during World War II, and their money, land, and businesses were confiscated or sold far below true value. We lived with a few Japanese in the area, but didn't mix at all. I was afraid that the Germans, that is us, could still be taken away, as the Japanese were. We did not ever speak German outside the house, even though my grandmother and my great-grandfather, of course, spoke German to each other, but we weren't allowed to speak German outside the house, that's for sure. So we were still concerned that we would be taken away as the Japanese were, so we'd better not get out of line or stand out in any way. Another thing that altered my spiritual path was my complexion. My acne was severe. Girls would cringe and shy away in the halls at school without even talking to me. I tried my best to participate in events, but all I got was pity and sidelined away from the good things. Religion actually became quite an interesting problem for me in high school. One girl kept showing up in my life, Ellen. She was in my sixth grade class with deep red hair, freckles, and dark brown eyes. And I really liked her. Sadly, she moved to a different junior high school district, or maybe the district moved into her area. Anyway, she had to go to a different junior high school. With daring, however, I sneaked her into our eighth grade sock hop dance for a little while, till she was asked to leave, since they figured out she wasn't supposed to be there. I waited with her at the curb for her parents, who came and took her home. A couple of years later, in 10th grade, I was able to take her to the sophomore dance with my dad driving. He was a bit cautious about where this was going, as she was Jewish. That dance showed me how bad discrimination is on kids. At school, the Monday after the dance, my Christian friends who were there wouldn't talk to me, and her Jewish friends were not happy with her for going to the dance with me. I think it was harder on me than her, though. And unfortunately, I moved suddenly a couple of months later, never talking to her again. Sad, even today, thinking of it. It taught me how cruel religious intolerance can be. Off to another thread. Well, in my sophomore year at college, I met Jan when my sister had her over to our house in Lake Oswego. They were in the high school choir together and they were practicing. Jan introduced me to Unitarianism. I am forever grateful that she did. Back at college, I looked around and found a new Unitarian group starting up in the nearby college town of Corvallis, Oregon, home to Oregon State University. It felt right to be attending there, even though it was a drive. But gas was only a bit over 25 cents a gallon in those days. One bumper sticker we had was at the Unitarians, "To question is the answer." I fit right in, since I kept asking questions during my confirmation class at the Congregational Church back in 1964. I guess a bit of my dad had rubbed off on me. Back at college in my junior year, I had two roommates. One came from a Unitarian family and the other was studying to be a Methodist minister. The three of us had many conversations over the various translations of the Bible. The guy studying to become a Methodist minister had something called a concordance, sort of like an encyclopedia about the Bible. And it was, you know, it was like 4 feet long. It was a massive bookcase full. I came to understand that the Bible translations depended a lot on political points of view rather than on true meanings or the actual translation. But I won't get into that. Another thread. Years later, on a farm in Warrenton, Oregon, I was living there and there were a dozen cattle in the field. I watched as the packing house truck came. The driver shot one of the steers and hoisted it into the truck to take it to the packing house. It was so sad to see the killing of an animal and saw how it suffered. Also, how the other steers panicked. They knew it was bad. I was sad for quite a while. James earlier, a couple of weeks ago, talked about surrender. In the mid-90s, while I was in counseling, I determined that if my dad wasn't an alcoholic, he was certainly acting like it. I also came to suspect that the reason we had been moving so many times was something called the, geographic cure? Just get out of town so the people that you've been offending didn't know anything about you when you moved into a new place. I did a lot better in my life for the Al-Anon meetings and learned a lot of new tactics to deal with my dad's behaviors. In those 5 or 6 years, I had learned to ask for help. Not an easy lesson for me. It felt a lot like surrender. Moving now to 1996, a change in my point of view. High water on the Columbia River, plus heavy spring rains and winds, broke my friend Tom's sailboat free from its moorings on the Columbia. Actually, it broke off the pilings below the waterline, and the whole mess was blown across the Columbia to fetch up on the Washington side of the river. I went with Tom and helped him to recover his boat. We were ferried over on the harbor master's launch across the fast-moving Columbia River, swollen and cold from winter storms. We were working with life jackets, but the icy cold water and swift currents were very dangerous. Logs were bobbing with some force and the whole wreck was shifting and settling in. That's the dock and the dockage and all the parts of the dock that were over there. We had to move other boats and clear a way out of the wreckage. Two other boats were already sunk on the bottom, with just masts sticking out above the water. We got the boat back and tied up, and I was very glad. When I got back and thought about the dangers we faced, I realized I had more courage than sense to risk my life like that, considering I had two young kids and a wife at home depending on my income. I had to take a different look at my life at that point. Now, you might know that here in Portland, we have a transportation system that is called TriMet. It's buses and now trains, and it's pervasive. Like any big city, there's this transportation system that takes people off the roads and puts them into buses and trains. From the mid-1970s to 2000, I was mostly working downtown and commuting via the TriMet bus system. I used that time to read a lot. I haunted bookstores and libraries for interesting books on Buddhism. I read a lot of Tibetan Buddhist books, including Training the Mind, the Book of Living and Dying, the Buddhist Bible, and many others. Now let me share some of those with you. Right. So we saw the Siddhartha. And this is D.T. Suzuki's Zen Buddhism. This is one I was given to me by people in the next apartment over back at college. And here's Training the Mind, by Trungyam Trungpa. Just have to do show and tell. This is one book that I've had for a long time, but until recently haven't been able to make much sense out of it. It's a translation of Dogen's Shobo Genzo, and I don't recognize the last word, Zui Monkey. We've always called it here at Brightway, the Shobo Genzo. And here's one that I'll just hold off right now. Just hold that thought. Sorry, get over here to stop the share. There we go. I also read a book based on the northwest corner of Washington State. I have a strong affection for the Puget Sound area, especially the San Juan Islands. The novel Snow Falling on Cedars is placed there. You may have heard of it. They actually had a movie about it as well. And I can fill in the book descriptions from my memories of the San Juan Islands. The Japanese family that is treated so badly is a Buddhist family. Many things pulling up my emotions. And I received in person this book. Click here. Zen in the American Green by Kjelgen Carlson. This is one of Kjelgen's books. I received that in 1994 at the Looking Glass Bookstore, which, by the way, is a different, at that time was in downtown Portland. Now it's on the southeast area. I'm not sure where exactly, but it's over there in the southeast in Portland. Great bookstore. Recommend it. But I actually got this. Kjelgen was there at the bookstore when I bought it, and my Unitarian minister actually took me to the bookstore to meet Kjelgen Carlson. It was really kind of a very special. I'll always remember such a wonderful time to meet with him. I was quite embarrassed actually, because I knew him to be a great teacher, and I was very happy to be there. So there were other books. The Tibetan Book of Living and Dying, a tremendous amount of spiritual teaching that I didn't really understand. I was casting about trying to find, you know, something that felt comfortable. A lot of the things that I read made sense. A lot of it didn't make sense. It was so difficult for me to make a cultural transition over that way. This is a fairly thick book, but it's a pretty good thing. I apologize for the Scotch tape at the top, but that helped keep the cover nice and tidy, and without getting too much wear on it. Another book that was very important to me was Stumbling Toward Enlightenment by Jerry Larkin, who was a Zen Buddhist teacher in Michigan, and she has a number of books. This is one that I found to be filled with stories of how she came to become a Zen Buddhist teacher, and struggling with her life, dealing with her dad's friends who abused her and made life very tough for her all the way through her college years. And it's just, I go back and read it every so often for further understandings. It's sort of like painting a concrete block. To make it shiny, you have to apply a lot of extra coats. And this is one of the extra coats of my concrete block. A Path with Heart by Jack Kornfield. Lots of very good teaching that I really took to heart. This is a new one to me. Shunryu Suzuki is a writer. And this is Zen Talks on the Sandokai. And I'm still working through this one, but it's one of those books that, you know, you buy books and you don't necessarily read them right away, and you get to them later. Well, for me today, or this this time is later. A Buddhist Bible. Very interesting comments on Buddhism. Not strictly Zen. Ambivalent Zen. You can see that I wore this one down pretty good. on the TriMet. Still Point Dhammapada, another one by Jerry Larkin. Living with the Buddha's essential teachings. So it's another way to state the precepts, the teachings that we have, and to gain deeper understanding from another point of view. Mind of Clover by Robert Aiken. This is one that we've discussed here at Brightway, and I've had this a long time, and it's still a great place to go to get insights into questions. One that we've talked about recently, I think it was last week, that Jinryu mentioned, this is a book that she finds most helpful and prizes, Why Buddhism is True by Robert Wright. And here's my prized bookmark from the Looking Glass Bookstore. Notice it says 318 Southwest Taylor. It's not there anymore, but I've just noticed this today. Notice that the phone number has no area code. That's how old this is. So that's all my books. Okay. So what do we got? Okay. One of the big markers, big things that happened in my spiritual life was in 2010. I was suffering a great deal in my life. My job performance was deemed not acceptable at the university, and my position was in jeopardy. I took the chance and called the employee assistance hotline, and they lined me up with a counselor. After a couple of sessions, she identified that I had PTSD and was suffering from ADHD and had been for decades. She referred me to a doctor who put me on a medication for it. It was actually amphetamines. Like night and day, I came out of the fog. It was amazing. I remember this to this day, just walking down the sidewalk. The colors and everything was so much more vibrant. I was able to see what was going on so much better. I was able to work much better, and my relationships at work and home improved markedly. My meditation was getting better too, because I could focus on what I was doing. I started asking better questions of my ministers at church. At one men's group retreat, I met the Reverend James Zeno Ford, who is the first ordained Soto Zen priest with full ordination and authorization as a teacher to then also become an ordained Unitarian Universalist minister. His teacher, I just found this out, his teacher was Domyo's Dharma grandmother, Hyon Ju Kennet Roshi. Today, he is the first of many who have followed this path. I recall the meeting with Reverend Ford quite well. I asked him about how to gain more Buddhist teachings in the church services. We had only one hymn in the hymnal, while other traditions had many. He saw through my confusion and suggested a contact Domyo at Westside Zen. That's the former name for Brightway. I had already run across Domyo's website and had signed up for the newsletter. I attended Westside a couple of times, when I think it was in the Wednesday or Thursday evenings. And I did that when I could. It felt so welcoming and warm. Only after I retired in 2016 was I able to attend evenings and Sundays. IT workers have to work very often, evenings and weekends, when the users are not impacted. So here I am, still asking questions and seeking the way. So surely there are some questions out there for me. So there's a reaction button on the Zoom screens that can raise hands. I can take you one at a time, or you can just speak up. You might have to come to the Zen cart, those of you in the Zendo, to ask questions if you have something you want to say or ask. Paula.
Thank you, Bob, for this talk. It's beautiful. I'm wondering, when you came to Brightway, was there, because I guess you've been there for a while, was there something really specific that resonated and for you that while you were asking questions or still asking questions that you feel at home there, or was there something about Brightway?
Oh, that's a good question. And I'd have to say it was more atmospheric. It was the amount of Buddhism and teachings and discussions and so forth that I was missing, that I had not experienced before. There was the chanting, which I enjoyed. It was like singing, but not singing. There were the ceremonial things. It wasn't just sitting in the pews, kicked back listening. Although, frankly, I spent 25 years singing in the church choir, so I was always there on Sundays, and so it felt rather normal. But with this situation at Brightway, it felt much more intimate, much more engaged, and I was seen as an actual person rather than just one of many. When you have a choir of 65 some odd choristers, you can get lost because that's just the choir up front, and then you've got the 200 or 300 people in the audience, in the congregation. You're just not seen. You're just one of the part of the furniture, more or less. But thank you. Another one, Jinryu.
Thank you, Bob. It was a great talk. I wonder if you can answer this, because you spent so much time in the choir as opposed to in the congregation. I don't know. I'm making a guess at that. But how do you find our Sangha as compared to a Christian church organization or community in your experience?
Thank you, Jinryu. That's really a thought-provoking question. The Unitarian Church felt very much like a Christian style church, but that was mostly in terms of the accoutrements, the architecture, the choir, the pulpits, all of that kind of thing. And it was very similar. Excuse me. And truly enough, it was very similar to what I've seen on the inside of synagogues, frankly. So it had that European, church-synagogues architecture. But I think what you're talking about more is how do I find the relationship between the choir and the congregation? Well, the congregation was so huge, we actually had two separate services of around 200 to 300 people per service. So you're talking about one person or one family amongst all these people. Even, you know, getting to know half of them would be a major task. That's why I said the Bright Way is so much more intimate, so much more, I get to know people a lot more deeply than I did in that large church. So it's much more of I'd like to say family, but it's not a family really. It's a sangha, and the sangha participates together much more closely than the congregation did for me. Now, other people found that to be very comforting because they didn't have to, you know, be alone or have to stand out in any way. But I feel Bright Way is so much more intimate and so much more close than the big church. Did that answer your question? Okay. Ellen.
Even turn on my camera for that. You know me, I love the books, right? So
right.
I'm wondering if you were always a book learner, if you were always a reader, and if you really rely, you know, for other areas of growth in your life, if you rely on writings and teachings.
Yeah, actually, Ellen, that's a good point. I didn't bring that up, and I probably should have. Yes, I have been a voracious reader, mostly of science fiction, but a heavy reader all my life. And my first degree was in English, teaching English in the secondary or high school level. And there's a whole lot of other stuff I could have brought in, but I just brought in the Buddhist teaching books that I read so voraciously over the years.
I keep thinking that I wonder if you feel like this too. Do I rely too heavily on books rather than experiential learning? You know, not just when it comes to my practice, but everything. I mean, it's sort of like my first line of defense is to go look something up or to go find the right book. Or every single time someone mentions a book that's even remotely connected to us, I go and get it or I look it up. So do you feel like, are there any ways in which relying on books is a negative, not a negative necessarily, but a default is what, for me, it's a default, and I want to expand, but I don't know really how that goes.
Good question. And I think it bears examination for each of us to find out what our learning style is. As we learned back years ago, and they're learning even more now, various people have various styles of learning. There are people who learn from visual, people who learn from just reading. There are people who only learn from people telling them things, and other people have to do it tactily. They have to have something, you know, they have to have something in their hands to even to read. You know, if it's on a screen, I don't see it on a screen and immediately understand it fully. I need to look at it. I'm more analytical, I guess, Ellen. And that's what I do, is I analyze what's actually being said. Why are they trying to say, what are they trying to say? What are they trying to get to here? Especially in fiction and history, and those kinds of things are very much more explicit. But with novels and other things, they're trying to make an artistic point of view or create a mood or something. So, you know, it becomes much more analytical in that regard. That's why koans in Zen are so good for me, because it gets me out of doing that analytical work, because there isn't anything, there's nothing there to grab onto. So, did I answer all of your question? Okay, good. Thank you. Jinryu.
I do have another question, but it's quick. I want to make sure people have a chance also to ask questions. But my question is, what would your mom and dad say about your Buddhism and your Buddhist practice?
I don't think they'd understand. I don't think they'd be happy. I think they'd be very, I think my dad would probably be more accepting, but my mom would not be happy whatsoever. Yeah. Yeah. Especially, and it's an odd juxtaposition about your question, and I didn't include this in my talk, but my sister has been a Mennonite for the last 25, 30 years. And is living in a Mennonite community in northern Idaho. And she's comfortable there, but completely outside the family's understanding. I mean, just, we've gone totally two different directions. The Mennonites, if you don't know, is a very conservative German Protestant group that has separated themselves, like the the folks in Pennsylvania,
what are Amish?
Amish. Yeah. Yes, they're very closely aligned to the Amish. Yeah, but they're all over the West. So anyway, but they take care of her, and that's all I really care about, is she getting, you know, is she being treated well? So, yeah. So to answer your question directly, they would not be happy. Betty.
Thank you. Thanks for this talk, Bob. It's really interesting. And I'm wondering if you still have maintained a relationship or participation with the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, as you.
Oh yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. We're still members down at First Church.
How do you balance that? How do you go and attend the services?
You know, I don't, because they've been able to broadcast the services on Sunday. I can view the recordings later on Sunday or Monday or Tuesday, so I can attend to my preference, which is Brightway, and still keep up with what they're doing in social justice and all the different programs that they have at the Unitarian Church. And of course, I keep up with Reverend Ford because of his Zen teachings as well. Online. He's got two Zen groups that he teaches with, and I think he's a consulting minister down in San Diego area, I think. I'd have to double check on that.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet. Yes, Shiketsu.
You talk about this Reverend Ford who studied under Kyogen's teacher.
Yes.
And I know that Kyogen, when he was still living, he met on a regular basis with people of other in other congregations in the Portland area. And I bet Reverend Ford was part of that. Was he? Do you know?
I don't know. I do know that there was an ecumenical council that the Unitarian ministers and Kilgan went to here in Portland. And it was very instrumental in creating bridging pathways between the various congregations to make sure that everybody was fully respected and had their points of view understood properly without distortion.
So this council was an ongoing thing?
I think it's still ongoing. I'm not sure for sure, but I think so. I think Domio mentioned it to me a couple of years ago that she was still aware that it was in operation.
Thank you.
You bet. I appreciate these questions. I was concerned about having a stunned silence after the end of my presentation. Yes. Hi.
Hi, Bob. Thank you so much for your wonderful talk. I identified so much with your growing up, and I bet there are people who interested in religion often have an awful lot in common as they find out. I was wondering if you wouldn't mind, is there something you could say about maybe how you started sitting, or if there's anyone who helped you at the beginning, or, you know, how that sort of path unfolded?
Yeah, actually, I started sitting as a part of the Al-Anon process, because they talk about prayer and meditation. And I was like, okay, prayer, thanks. Been there, done that. Didn't help. So I went to meditation, and so I was reading in the books, Ellen, books again, that how to do meditation, and so I worked on that. And oddly enough, I got to a point though where there was one night that I was meditating, actually in the same room, and I started. There was a candle, incense, and I was working on meditating, and I started seeing monsters and dragons in my head, and they were frightening, very frightening. I was, you know, I'd been through the military. I'd been frightened before by real things. These were things in my own head, and I didn't know what to do with it. I didn't have a teacher. I didn't have anybody to talk to about it. And I just backed way off and I said, okay, what did I get into here? What's happening? That's what actually I think brought me to Bright Way. It was also my necessity to have a teacher, to have somebody help me understand what was happening. And Domio and Shintai actually both have been very instrumental in that.
Thank you. So, so do we all.
Oh, Jeffrey, I'm sorry. I was looking at the other part of the screen.
No, that's fine. Bob, thank you so much for such a personal and heartfelt story about your spiritual path. And I enjoyed the books too, sort of as part of the wayfinding. And I related not to everything, but many, many threads of your story just resonated for me. So thank you. I guess the question that I wanted to ask you was, so here we are, here you are at this point, you know, in your journey, in your life, and you talked a lot about questions, and I'm wondering if there are any compelling questions for you in your spiritual practice now that you're, you know, sitting with or that are resonating for you.
Thank you, Jeffrey, for that question. It's a good question, and I have two responses. First one, it says, where in the hell do I start? There's so many questions. And how do I rank them or judge them or put them in order? And I haven't tried to do that. But learning that enlightenment is not the be-all and end-all of practice. Tells me that I'm in the right place because I don't really have a burning desire to become one that has had Satori or enlightenment. But I'm here because it helps in my life. The precepts are very good guidelines. And I can help other people. And it all kind of brings everything together for me. So what questions do I have going forward? Sure. Learning more of Dogen's analyses. How to see the commonalities between the various Zen threads or denominations, I guess. Is that what the name is here, is denominations? I'm not sure. Schools, I guess, is what I would think of, is the Zen school versus the Nichiren school and so forth. But they're all different flavors of Buddhism. And of course, there's the bigger questions of, you know, how can Buddhists in one part of the world do things that the other Buddhists in the other part of the world would just be aghast at? You know, there's a lot of different things going on there too. But I don't have all the questions even in hand today, Jeff. Did that help answer your question? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I appreciate it. No, I think any response that you had actually would have addressed my question. It was curiosity. So thank you.
Okay, sure.
Bob, it's a great talk, inspiring. When I first went to Bright Way in November 2018, you were one of the first persons so welcoming. I mean, everybody there was welcoming. And you looked at me and said, "You look familiar. Are you Unitarian?" And I thought, "Oh, yes, I am." And I said, "I go there because they have four marvelous choirs." I said, "For me, using the human voice, tapping sound is part of worship. And I need to be in a community that does that at whatever level." So I'm glad you were, you know, upfront about all your paths to Zen. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome, Ruthann. And we'll have to talk about the use of singing in a person's path in life. But not here today. We've only got a couple of minutes left. Anybody else? Okay, one more minute. Oh, gosh. I don't know that I know the closing verse. I'm looking in the book. I don't have it memorized. I'm sorry. Does somebody have it?
Well, it's just the one we use before the All Buddhas. We offer the merit of this Sangha discussion to all.
Could you do that for us, please?
We offer the merit of this Sangha discussion to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha, Prajna, Paramita.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you for the kitty pictures, Shinryu.